One thing that I want to note, this issue, this is not for women to fix. This is not women's fault. This is for the companies, for the industry to fix.
Welcome to Ambition Theory, Women in Construction. This show asks questions that everybody is thinking about, but doesn't want to say out loud. It's about tackling complex topics like, why are there so few women in senior leadership positions? What is it going to take to change this? Each episode is a combination of motivation and tactical strategies to get ahead. We get out of our comfort zones and we take action. We learn, grow, and create opportunities. I am your host, Andrea Jansen, a certified executive coach with an MBA, and since 2018, I've coached over 1,000 construction professionals to level up their leadership. Let's get started. Dr. Paul Hickey studies gender diversity in architecture, engineering, and construction leadership. Paul studies women's industry representation and identifies methods to improve diversity. In this conversation, we talked about what LinkedIn tells us about the path to leadership for women, how women face greater obstacles than their male counterparts in career advancement, and how women's path requires extra rungs on the corporate ladder, more frequent job changes, and a greater accumulation of education and connections. I learned a ton from this interview, and I hope you do as well. When I started Ambition Theory over 5 years ago, I knew that if we genuinely wanted to make the construction industry inclusive for women, that change needed to start at the top. But 5 years ago, nobody was ready to hear this message. Something has shifted recently, though, and it's really exciting. Organizations are reaching out because they want us to do a presentation for their leadership teams, and in some cases, the entire company. They see that up until now, the burden of change has rested entirely on the shoulders of women. If this message speaks to your association or company, we want to hear from you. Visit ambitiontheory.com/book-a-call to learn how you can book a presentation for your organization. Welcome, Paul Hickey, to Ambition Theory, Women in Construction. I am so honored that you are here today. Can you introduce yourself and share what you do?
Sure, and very excited to be here. My name is Paul Hickey. I'm a recent PhD graduate from the University of Maryland in Civil and Environmental Engineering. And the study that we've been working on and recently published is Architecture, Engineering, Construction. AEC, and leadership diversity, as far as gender diversity, in the U.S. industry. So I look at the top 400 companies in the United States and the diversity they have in their leadership.
Okay. And I saw you present this information a couple of weeks ago, and I was very interested in your findings. And that's why we're here today. But before we go diving into the data and what you learned, take me back and share what motivated you to study women in the construction industry and their pathway to leadership.
So the first thing I get normally when people look at me, they're like, you're a guy. Why do you care about gender diversity? It's a very personal journey. My wife, when she entered the civil engineering field, she trained the young guys who then became managers. Repeat, repeat, repeat. And at one point, she was the only woman engineer in her firm. And then they hired another woman engineer, and she became her one employee that reported to her. So it was very personal in watching her fight through the industry. And despite having tremendous qualifications, the degree, the PE, the knowledge, the respect of clients, it was not reflected in her advancement in her career. So not an affirmative action guy. I'm an equal opportunity guy. So I just want to have the opportunity to create opportunities for others.
Okay, I find that so interesting. So it started of this like personal experience of your wife. You were observing it from the sidelines. At what point were you like, I think this might be a bigger issue not just this thing happening in a vacuum?
Well, so a PhD has always been a goal of mine, personal goal for years. And I found at the University of Maryland a project management program that had a PhD track as well. And it's funny because when I was talking to Bonnie, my wife, and I basically said, hey, what do you think about this? And she looked at me and she said, you're only happy when you're miserable going to school. So I was like, okay, does that mean yes? So went through the classes and then met up with my professor, my advisor, Dr. Chui, and we were talking about different ideas. And he actually floated the idea. And the second it was out of his mouth, I knew that was the topic for me. Because one thing that I had recognized with other students and talking to them is they didn't necessarily have a passion for their topic. And it's an extensive process you go through. This took me 3-4 years to start the initial research, conduct the actual studies, write them up, get them published. So if you're not committed to it, you're probably not going to follow through, or it's going to be torture. But since I had a personal connection to it with Bonnie, it just resonated with me. And it was just a no-brainer. How many of those do you get in your life? And this was just a great opportunity for me.
Okay, that's really cool. So you started this research. Can you talk about what you learned in the research?
So in the beginning, when we started the preliminary research, if you will, and one of the first things you want to do is take a look at the academic landscape. Something really important to mention up front, this is an academic study targeted at industry, but the rigor in the study, in the research, in the methodology is, let's just say the depth in academia is much more significant than in industry. So the numbers that we found, the analysis that we've done, the literature supporting it, it's a scientific method. And at the beginning of this journey, to get back to your question, we didn't find much academic research on this topic. There was talk about gender diversity in general, some in the construction industry, but not as significant, and very little, if any, at the time on women in the executive suite. So we found this be a great opportunity to create a new, I hesitate to say create, but expand an area of understudied in terms of gender diversity.
And what was your hypothesis at the start?
Well, to put it in layman's terms, it's an all boys network. It is male dominated. And that's what we found in talking to women over the last few years with our research is like, this is what I've been saying all along. But again, at the beginning, there was little research so that we could hypothesize that it was an all boys network, but we didn't have the data to prove it. Now we have it.
And so when you say all boys network, does that mean like at the senior leadership level, the whole industry? Kind of unpack that for me a bit more.
Well, our focus is the leadership. So if you look at the industry overall, it was at the beginning of our study, it was 9.9% women in the entire industry. That's increased to 10.9. But that's executives to interns, engineering and non-engineering, the entire industry. So it is very male dominated, basically 9 and 10. But our study specifically focuses on leadership. And if I can take a half step back, one of the big findings of our first study, if you look at the population in the United States, and by the way, this is a US focused study, 50.8% of the population in the United States are women. But if you look at the civil engineering graduates over the last 24 years, it was actually 21.9%. Now, why 24 years? In the first study, looking at the C-suite, we wanted to take a step back and say, are there enough women with an applicable degree long enough in a pipeline to be able to reach the C-suite? And we found a study that basically indicated the average time to the C-suite in all industries, not just AEC, in the United States was 24 years. So we said, okay, wanted to look. And again, 21.9% women with that degree. Do you need a civil engineering degree to succeed in the industry? Absolutely not. but it's an indicator. Then if you look at the whole industry, I mentioned 9.9% and now 10.9%. But then if you go to the engineering executives, the engineering piece, it's only 3.9% women. So how do you go from 1 in 2 to 1 in 5 to 1 in 10 to less than 1 in 25? That was the big finding of our first phase. So really validating that anecdotal all boys network, the anecdotal male dominated industry. Now we're starting to find numerical values that prove it. And it's amazing the number of women that have come up to us after reading our executive summary or seeing us talk at a conference and saying, that's what I've been saying all along. And now there's proof. And I can take this back to their respective companies and have the proof. And another interesting thing, men that I've talked to, both in the industry and in my personal life, as I've, you know, talked about my research, it had a big impact on them. And this was a reaction I got. These are not my words. I'm paraphrasing his. Wow. I thought women were complaining. I didn't realize this was real. So it's also impacting men's perceptions, which is very important. One thing that I want to note, this issue, this is not for women to fix. This is not women's fault. This is for the companies, for the industry to fix. However, we recognize that that may take time, so that in some of our recommendations as we go through the research, there are recommendations for companies to change, for industry to change, but also, hey, women, while you're waiting, here are some things that you can do to improve your opportunities as well.
Okay, so it started with this original hypothesis. It's kind of like men are kind of getting to leadership faster than women. It's not like the supply's there. Supply's not going through the pipeline. So it started kind of debunking that first myth, because I've heard people say, oh, it's a pipeline issue. Like, we don't have the pipeline of talent. So that's why we can't have women on the senior leadership team, because they don't have the experience to get there. So that's the first kind of myth that you debunked. What's the second?
There is actually a pipeline, a leaky pipeline. So I did that 1 in 2 to 1 in 5 to 1 in 10 to 1 in 25. The leaky pipeline, and this is research that we had from prior academic studies, not ours, but a lot of young girls are being driven away from STEM even before they get to high school, which is reducing that percentage. So even that 50% down to 21% of women graduating with civil engineering degrees, there's a significant leaky pipeline before you even get to college. Our third phase of research, we actually did interviews with 20 women leaders in the industry, and two or three of them. Now, these are women who are VPs or above today. But they said when they got to college, they weren't even realized, they didn't even recognize that civil engineering or construction was an option for them. So they were in college and they made the decision to move. But that was something that they had to do. I mean, how many other young girls and young women have been driven out of the pipeline with not even an opportunity? And then you get into the industry, a lot of women in those early positions are not getting the promotions fast enough compared to their male peers, and issues, again, finding this in prior literature, glass ceiling, hostile work environment, family, having to women bear a larger percentage of the responsibilities in the home. Again, that's prior literature. So for those reasons, they're being driven out. So that pipeline is leaking all the way to the executive suite.
Okay.
And so changes need to be done earlier.
Okay. So I want to talk about this leaky pipeline and what you found out, because I think it's so fascinating how you were able to quantify this.
So the leaky pipeline, we didn't necessarily do a quantification at each stage, aside from the four stages that I mentioned, or the four milestones that I mentioned. But what we did find is that women are continually being lost in that pipeline throughout. And it's not just a single item. is, you know, to your point earlier, there's not enough women in the pipeline. True, because they're being lost earlier. They're being driven out earlier. And that could be if they're maybe a first level manager and they're not having the opportunities to become a division manager. So you're losing them early enough such that they're never in that middle management position to have a chance to be selected for a VP or above.
And so we've heard from our clients say this all the time. They're like delivering value to their company. They're doing a really great job. Like they're checking all the boxes and they're like, all right, they have this inner desire to contribute more to the organization and they want to get that recognition. They want to have that official leadership title. And they ask, they're like, okay, I have the desire. And what they're met with is more boxes to check, right? It's like, oh, you need this. Oh, you've managed a $200 million project. Oh, to get to this, oh, you need a $300 million project. Or, oh, you've built like an office tower. Oh, you need to build an office tower and a school and a hospital. And then you'll have what it takes to get to that next level. And then these women, they go out and they're focusing on building this kind of breadth of experience instead of focusing on their leadership skills, on their influence, all of those things that you actually really help you when you are in that formal leadership role. I know from our clients, it's really frustrating. Can you talk about because you quantified this, like when I saw your presentation, when you talked about how you kind of answered that question, you're like, yes, this is happening. And here's how we found out. It's not all in your head. It's not this perceptions. Can you talk about that a bit more?
Sure. And I'm going to actually tie that in with the second phase of the study. We looked at LinkedIn. So the first stage, we basically did a quantification of the leadership. Second, and all this is ENR, Engineering News Record, top 400 companies in all three phases that we used. But in the second phase, we wanted to go a little bit deeper. So we wanted to look at career path. Do women and men follow the same career path or are they dissimilar? Our hypothesis that they were different, and that was proven. What we went through is we used it called web scraping. Essentially, you go into LinkedIn. We identified very carefully, and there was a lot of data cleaning, where we pulled the profiles of 2,843 men and women from LinkedIn in the ENR top 400 that had the titles of in leadership. One thing to note, the data that we pulled is the same data you would see if you went onto LinkedIn and pulled up my profile. We didn't have any special access, no special codes, no special information. And then we went through a very careful process to make sure that we sanitized the data, we removed any incomplete records. But what we found is that women work for more companies. They hold more titles, so they have more rungs on the corporate ladder, more jobs, higher education, larger networks, yet are still vastly underrepresented in the industry. Actually, if you can give me half a second. So women work for 56% more companies. They have 19% more titles. So to get to the same level, they have 1/5 more positions. So more rungs theoretically taking you longer to arrive. But that gets to your point where you ran a $200 million project. Well, now you have to go run a $300 million project. Whereas the male counterpart has the $200 million project and doesn't require the other one, they get fleeted up earlier. 73% more graduate degrees. More than half and less than 1/3, more than half of women and less than 1/3 of men had a graduate degree. And then 14% larger network, yet are 83% less represented. So women have to spend more time changing jobs, getting more education, creating larger networks, and yet are still underrepresented. Imagine if they did the same, how much worse it would be.
Yeah. So the other the thing that when I first saw your presentation, I wasn't surprised by the degrees, the rung, the job titles, the time, all that. That did not surprise me. The piece that surprised me was the larger network, because I feel like that's so much value left on the table, because construction is all about who you know. And when you're not having those people at that level, because that's the thing, like it is a very hierarchical organization. So kind of like, it does kind of matter if you have that position, because you have that authority to make those bigger decisions. And if people have those bigger networks, it's just more business opportunities that are not being leveraged. So that was the thing that really surprised me, because I always thought when you say like old boys club, it's like that networking piece is like so much more valuable. So can you talk a little bit more about that? Because I'm so curious about that aspect of it, the networking aspect.
Sure. Well, one thing to point out is the benefits of diversity: better business outcomes, more communication, hence the network, the larger networks, because women communicate better. Again, these are things we found in prior literature to support our analysis. But other things that diversity creates are happier customers, happier employees. Bringing diversity to the table brings different viewpoints, so you can have higher innovation. So the benefits of diversity are proven. Part of this messaging tour is to bring that message to the leadership, because the leadership speaks money. That's the language of the executive, money. And if you can package it in the terms of these will lead to better business outcomes, getting the diversity, hopefully it can drive greater diversity. And I'm sorry, can you repeat the last question? I tend to get off on my tangent.
Yeah, my question is about the networking, because that network, specifically in construction, it's all, and like any big job, there's like multiple companies working on the job, bidding for the project. It's all about who you know. So I was really surprised by the fact that women actually had bigger networks, because I think of like that old boys club analogy, like the women are excluded from those networking opportunities. And that I would just assume that they would have less connections, but your research is telling us that they actually have more. So I'm just curious if you could kind of talk more about that aspect of the research, that network piece.
Well, and it's interesting, because some of the supporting theories, it's called weak ties versus strong ties. Mm. So a weak tie or a strong tie is the group you have in the office, your connections with each other. You know, if you're working on a project team, those are strong ties, because you know each other, you're connected. The weak tie is, in this circumstance, knowing one of the suppliers, or maybe knowing a supplier who's not on the job, and it's unique information. So to your point, you would think that firms would want to have greater amounts of weak ties, so they would have access to unique pieces of data, which could lead to, for an individual, could lead to another job. So women having a larger network and changing companies more often makes sense, because they have access to that unique information. But, you know, to your point about connecting with companies, women should have more connections with those other companies, therefore be able to set up unique organizational partnerships or have connections with additional customers that would lead to better business outcomes for the organization. So your point is well taken, and it's surprising that companies aren't recognizing that more.
Okay, so I'm really curious. You talked about like the first time you started talking about your research, about people, like that first reaction was like, I didn't think this was a real thing. So what other mindset shifts have you seen since you've been sharing these insights?
The biggest, and I touched on it earlier, from women, it's validation. Again, that scientific approval, I shouldn't say approval, but that scientific backing in the academic process that we went through. So that's the biggest reaction that we've seen. We're just starting to get out to talk to companies. And this is the real exciting part of the research. I mean, the first part of the research, you're sitting at a computer, you're pulling up information, you're going through the research and pulling together the analysis. And most of it, the interaction was in the academic community. Now we're really starting to get out to the companies and educating them. not only on the actual issue, but the benefits of making change. So I will have more on that, hopefully in the next couple months. And by the way, we're going to GWIC 2023. If anybody's there, please come by and say hi.
So that's the groundbreaking Women in Construction Conference.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yes.
Our outreach tour.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I was there during Women in Construction Week 2023 in one of your sessions. And it was the highlight of my week. And I really believe women in the audience, like what you gave them was such an incredible experience because of that validation. Like it's not in my head. Like this is a real thing. And I just think it's such a powerful way. And also the gift of, like, you said it earlier in this interview, you said, this is not women's problem to solve. And I think a lot of the initiatives to date have really put the burden of responsibility on women to be the solution, be the change maker. Can you talk about kind of some about that a little bit more? Because we're on the same page here. I think, like,
I'm in a friendly space.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk more about that. Like this, like really this idea that it's not, women can't change this, and how we can take this information forward. Do you know what the number one question we get when speaking to companies about our Leadership Accelerator program for women in construction? We already have an internal leadership program or a mentorship program available, which is great. But the thing is, these programs don't work the same way for women as they do for men. There are many reasons why, but the most striking one that if you're a woman listening right now, you'll probably recognize right away. It's the double bind. We did some research last year and found that 78% of women were told that if they wanted to accelerate their path to leadership, they needed to be more confident. But 70% of those same women were also told that they were being too bossy. Basically, as soon as a woman embodies the traits most typically associated with leadership in the construction industry, they're faced with negative feedback. This is the double bind. And this is why specialized training for women is needed. If you want to learn more about how our Leadership Accelerator program can help you address the double bind and many other obstacles women face on the path to leadership, please visit ambitiontheory.com/LAP.
I don't want to say that women can't change this. I would say it's up to leadership to change it. And that the women in leadership at their respective organizations can certainly drive the change, assuming they've been provided the opportunity to be in those positions. One of the things that we found in the third phase of our research, where we interviewed the 20 VP women, VP and above, was that since they were in that position to make change in the organization, their view, it wasn't necessarily on improving the organization for women employees. It was improving for all employees, which included women. And some of the ideas that they had come up with were, again, I don't want to say targeted for women, but they were targeted for everyone. But they provided that diverse view where it wasn't just the male perspective and the male point of view as it had been for the previous, maybe 100 years in that particular firm. So as women are going through, again, I want to get back to the firms. It's really the firms that need to make these changes. Some of the ideas that had come up were creating a safe space. Sounds simple, but a couple of the comments that we received, one woman, again, VPs and above, she had to hide in her car underneath a bridge covered up to pump for her newborn. And her comment was basically like, what woman's going to sign up for that? Yeah. So one of the solutions that was offered by someone else in the study was they basically created an office in the trailer on the work site. This is not back at the home office. This is on the work site that was for personal time. And if it was a nursing mother, if it was someone to practice religious, services or ceremonies, or meditation or whatever, but it wasn't tagged as nursing mother's room, which could then create a negative backlash. That's something that we haven't touched on yet. Some of the women we've talked to, they were hesitant to implement specific plans or specific policies because of the fear of the backlash from that 90% male community. Again, that's not women's fault, but the environment that they're in, the dominant group, could have a negative backlash towards them.
Okay, I
love that. Answer the question?
Yes, and really, okay. The thing I have heard before, I've said this before, but like, how do you get more women into leadership? You get more women into leadership. And as you were talking, I'm like, that, it validates that assumption, right? When you have those women at the table. Because when I think I was talking about like the burden of responsibility being on the women, because there's so few women at that high level, when you place the burden on the women, most of them are like mid-level managers or entry-level employees. And they're usually, a lot of these initiatives are they're taking them on. But like you said, they have no resources. They're not in a position of making any decision. So that's where it's really like the firm needs to really get those women into those leadership positions, leverage them, give them a seat at the table. And it's just like that snowball effect, right? It's like, you gotta kind of like, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Sometimes I think it's like, you need to just take the risk and get those women into those levels of leadership. And then the rest is going to follow.
And it's giving the person authority. If you have a DE&I manager for the company, but they're a senior project manager, and they're embedded in one of the groups, they go into a VP's office, it's not going to have the same impact as if it was a chief diversity officer reporting to the CEO and they walk into the same VP's office. Guess what? You're going to have a different reaction. Mm-hmm. You really need to empower those people in the organization. You know, creating a DE&I program is great, but is it staffed properly? Is it funded properly? I mean, if you create something, you probably should give it a multi-year budget. That's one of the recommendations we had. So you're sending a signal to the organization, this is important to us as leadership. And you know, you got grassroots certainly, but top down, you know, that's probably going to have a little more impact, at least in the short term, but then that infuses it into the culture. One item that we found in our first study was that companies with a commitment to diversity, and this wasn't specifically gender, and they had a supplier program, a diversity supplier program. They talked about it in their mission statement. Maybe they put, you know, International Women's Day on their website, or they had an employee spotlight or something. It was a 77% increase in diversity because they were putting it out to the world. This is on their sites, their websites, that diversity is important to us. So it shined the light upon themselves and those companies were performing. So that's a simple thing to do.
That's really interesting. And it really kind of like reinforces this concept that's like, you don't have to have it all figured out. It doesn't have to be perfect before you take action. Because I love that you've quantified the action as simple as highlight an employee on Women International Women's Day, or put something in the website that actually had a quantitative like result on the diversity in the company and the performance, right?
Yes.
That's really cool that you uncovered that. I have another question, because what I've noticed in actions that like the industry has taken, and you talked about like this pipeline that's leaky, right? Like there's those women and girls who are like not even going in and not even seeing construction or AEC as an option. But then once they're there, there's like these different stages where they fall off. So I've noticed most initiatives to date are really focused on that recruitment piece, on going to schools, like really like shifting, like getting that entry point filled, like filling the pipeline from the top. Can you talk about the benefits of that approach and then also some of the limitations of focusing just at that very beginning of the pipeline?
It's a fantastic start. But if you're not nurturing their careers throughout, you can bring in 50% women first year. How many are going to stay? Are you changing your policies? Are you changing the way that you treat your employees? Are you making it less male-centric? One example we found, and this is anecdotal, but a company in their marketing for new hires, so they're really, their recruiting pitch included references to sports, Star Trek, and I think the other one was something about war. But very male-dominated segments, if you will. Not saying that women don't like Star Trek or sports at all, but those are traditionally male symbols. And if you're one of the few women sitting in a room with a number of men and the images are male-centric, maybe you don't even join that company. Or maybe if you're hired, you already have, you know, you feel like you're already one step behind. So the recruiting is incredibly important. Getting qualified women, that 21.9%. Even forget the 50% population, because not all women are interested in, you know, construction and civil engineering, of course, but not all men are even. But if you got that 21.9%, why isn't the industry closer to 21.9%? Why isn't the leadership closer to 21.9%? So even when you're doing the recruiting, which is great, but then you need to change that first 5 years. How impactful is that first 5 years of someone's career? You know, if you're investing in them, not only money, but time and training and quality of work life, greater chance that they'll stay and become that first level supervisor. If you go back a couple questions, we talked about the, I think you said $200 million project, then the $300 million project for a woman. Why does the woman need to get additional checkboxes than the man? So that's a mindset from the hiring managers and the division managers and the VPs and the executives. If they're looking at two candidates, why does the woman need additional training? Why can't she succeed with the same or even less than the man? So, you know, what you've described takes care of the first 2 years, maybe. You're still going to have that pipeline. And then fast forward, we talked about the percentage, and I don't have the actual percentage, but women carry a greater load in family than men. And that is a situation that is certainly outside the workforce, and the leadership of a company is not going to impact that. But what are your policies and procedures to reintroduce women after they've been on maternity leave or they've taken an extended leave of absence to take care of an elderly parent? How are you bringing them back in? You know, not only, well, we protected their job because we have to because of the law. No. How are you bringing them back up to speed? And by the way, how much time are they out? That's career drag. Have they lost a few months? Has someone else gotten promoted while they were gone? You know, protecting their position is one thing, but helping them catch up and giving them the opportunity to, you know, for that full nurturing of their full career.
Okay. So I want to talk about more actions that can be taken kind of from that firm perspective, from that leadership perspective. So, because this is, I think we are on the same page with the, like, really need to focus on that that advancement piece, because everybody else is focusing on that recruitment piece. Like, there's a lot of initiatives going on there. So let's talk about what can be done.
Later in the career?
Yeah.
One, the simple, everybody says, you know, talks about training. Are you providing similar training to all of your candidates? And when I say candidates, I'm talking about maybe a middle manager who's looking to move up. The women have more education. That is actually 53% to 31%. But if women have more formal education, they've obviously proved that they have what it takes to learn and go through a formal process. Is that being considered? Or are you looking at just job-focused training? And if it's just job-focused training, are women receiving those same opportunities as men? And that should be an easy check from an HR perspective, I would think. I mean, you have everybody's resume, certainly. You have their, if they've been with the company, they have, I'm sure, the HR requirements to track the training and track, you know, everything that they've performed, the meetings they've gone to, all that. So you should be able to do a blind test. I mean, what's to say you couldn't remove the names from two job histories and take a look at them and see who's more qualified? But it really goes to that long-term nurturing piece.
Mm-hmm. And what about sponsorship? Because I have a big advocate of sponsorship over mentorship.
Absolutely.
I have many podcasts on the topic. Did that come up in your research?
It did as a recommendation. So many of the women that we, this is again third phase, many of the women we interviewed, they talked about mentorship. Sponsorship wasn't brought up as a term as much as mentorship, because I think most people lump them together, even though they're distinctly different, as you well know. But a number of them that were more successful talked about the CEO, the COO, kind of, even that sponsorship took them under their wing in an early point in their career. The company had a special program that would take a young engineer and put them in a key role with the COO. What one woman talked about the fact that, I think she said she was like 2-3 years into her career. And then for 6 months, they basically had a rotating, and that was the assistant to the COO of the entire company. And then they got rolled back into the organization. She said she was one of two women in the history of the company that were selected for that role. And she's the only one that stayed. The other one.
Wow.
But just that. That, I mean, that's
loyalty.
It's all men.
Yeah, that loyalty, though, like when you give that opportunity, right? If it pays off in that, like, really extreme loyalty. So I have to talk. I wanted to ask another, and this might be a tough question, but if you're working and you're literally like you're seeing yourself in the research, you're like, I have, for me to be successful here, I'm seeing the research happen in my company. I know there's going to be extra rungs for me. What are things like that women can actually do? Because we know the like systemic change is going to take a while, right? Like we don't want to hold our breath and just wait and just be like, okay, Dr. Paul Hickey has exposed this issue. It's all going to be so.
Sorry, I still laugh when you say that. It's still, my title is still new. So,
so it's like this idea that it's a systemic change. It's going to take a while. So kind of like holding your breath and waiting may not be the best strategy because you're likely not going to get the outcome that you want. So what can women do in the short term as we're kind of waiting for the systemic change to happen?
Well, we just touched on a key one, sponsorship and mentorship. At any stage of your career, having a mentor and even a sponsor is better. That's incredibly important. If you're a VP, having the COO, the COO as your sponsor is vital to your continued growth. As a junior engineer, maybe it's a project manager or a senior project manager that you're getting it from. If you're early in your career, at any stage, but really those early years are so critical, it doesn't necessarily have to be your direct supervisor. There's a potential stigma that if I'm interacting with my direct supervisor, I can't necessarily share my concerns about my direct supervisor. So maybe it's somebody in a different department. Maybe it's somebody in a different company. One of the things you may want to consider is an industry group. And a great suggestion that we picked up was volunteer for a committee. Mm-hmm. Because those organizations, you know, maybe it's American Association of Civil Engineers or you know, something like that. They're looking for volunteers. So if you come in and go, hi, I want to volunteer, chances are you'll get a chance. They'll bring you on a committee. But now you're interacting with people in different companies. You're creating weak ties, which creates additional unique pieces of data for you, which you could bring back to your company as ideas and suggestions. You can incorporate it into your own professional growth, or if things aren't working out at your firm, Maybe it's an opportunity to switch companies. So that's incredibly important. And do it early. You know, when you walk in the door, start asking around. Another one that we found, and it seems obvious, but seek a supporting personal relationship sphere, if you will. One of the things that we found and validated in prior research is that in our case, women, but in the prior research, men and women who have supportive partners, a tight family unit or friends that they can lean on, succeed better, faster, because they have that outlet. And if it's outside of work, then there's less of a chance of any negative ramifications. Now, certainly making a decision on your life is incredibly personal. So take that with a grain of salt, but surrounding yourself with positive people that will support you is really important. Those are a couple. You want to go to any others or?
No, those are great. I love it. Like sponsorship, networking, building those relationships. And I actually love the fact that you pointed out that this sponsor doesn't need to be your boss. And I would actually say, and this may not, people may not like this, but your sponsor should actually not be your boss, because the truth is your boss may not be your advocate. And I've seen it more often than not that the boss is more often not advocating for you up the chain. So having those other people that can do it either like in a loose connections kind of way, kind of like through a volunteering, they're seeing at each other at a conference, they say your name, they're like, oh, hey, I got to look out for that person. Or having people in a different department when they're kind of decide like, what's the next opportunity? They can be that advocate, not in like, you don't have to rely on your boss. Cause I think it's a little risky to assume. I think there's this assumption that your boss is going to advocate for you. And if you just work really, really hard, like you're going to move forward. And that's something that people notice.
It's funny because I think of it this way. And no, this is not the way it should be, but the way it is, I think. If your boss promotes you, they're losing your skills because you're moving to a different group or you're becoming their peer. So my personal views, and this is not the study, but the way that I approached my career when I was a business guy, if you will, was building my lieutenants through the organization. So I was trying to promote my folks such that when I moved up, I would have a larger network within the company. But a lot of supervisors don't necessarily think that way.
Mm-hmm. It's abundance over the scarcity mindset. That abundance always, the abundance always goes ahead faster, but it's a mindset that we are ingrained in. So Dr. Paul Hickey, thank you so much. I'm so honored that you said yes to come on the podcast and be one of the first to help like get the word out, because this information is so valuable. But we end our podcast with an action that people can take within 24 hours after learning something new, because we want this research to be applied so that it can have a lot of impact. So how, and I want to take it from a firm perspective. So if you are in a senior leadership position and you just learned about this information, what's a great way to get started just to get the ball rolling?
Well, we'd certainly love if you reached out to us and we can bring a greater depth of the information, both the results and our recommendations. But if you're not able to do that, I would take a look at your public-facing website. What are you committed to? Are you committed to diversity, and whether it's women or diversity in general, changing your public-facing message, which then brings accountability upon yourself to be committed to that?
So, Paul, this information is so valuable. How do people connect with you and get more of the details of this research?
Well, I would be amiss if I didn't use LinkedIn, especially since that was the second phase of our study. So please hit me up on LinkedIn. It's Paul J. Hickey. I do have a PhD in civil engineering in my title, so hopefully I pop out. Admittedly, the photo is a little younger, but hopefully I look close enough. But there's no beard in that one. So there you go. We look forward to hearing from you. And we're really excited about this next phase and getting the information campaign out and talking to companies, really to make sure that people understand this is an issue. It's not just, you know, oh, people are complaining about it. Absolutely not. And then we can start really talking about some detailed suggestions for your individual organization. So I look forward to hearing from everybody. Thanks.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Paul. Hey, before you go, I wanted to take a minute to read a review of our podcast. This review comes from Charmaine on LinkedIn. I discovered this gem a few days ago, and I have been listening ever since. It's gotten to the point where I'll take notes when I hear something that I really like, because I did not realize how hard I resonated with so many of the things that were said through the speakers and the hosts. Ambition Theory is a really well thought out series discussing the things we've traditionally shied away from, don't discuss enough of, or maybe even never considered, all in the construction industry. The narrative about us not speaking up enough or not having enough opportunities is slowly working towards solutions-based models. However, there are still fundamental issues that drive us from reaching our full potential beyond these items. And I love the framework that is presented through these episodes that bring not just solutions for people in power, but bite-sized approaches for the listener who is aiming at continuous self-improvement. Even though the podcast puts an emphasis on women in construction, I think it's an amazing listen for any individual wanting to grow. We could do so much more if we worked with each other instead of against each other. Thank you so much for that generous review. We really love hearing from our listeners. And I'm wondering if I can ask you a favor. Can you take a minute and leave us a 5-star review and a comment on Apple Podcasts? That really helps us to get the word out so that we can keep making episodes for you for free. Thank you for listening.